keeping my eyes shut became harder. The tighter I held them, the more they twitched. I detected a man's cologne, expensive like Paul's, but not the same brand. Behind it, the scent of musk, the way a man's suit smelled after a long day at a desk, perspiration mixed with Old Spice and office. As soon as I opened my eyes, my heart stopped. Standing before the hospital bed was my cousin, Matthew. My face flushed hot as my heart crawled up my throat. He wore a tailored suit, subtly patterned in a dark plaid. His loosely curled locks shined from hair product, his Roman nose distinctive.
"Hello, Gray,"
he said, setting a glass vase of yellow tulips on the table beside my food tray.
"I'm so sorry,"
he added as he stood a card next to the etched crystal. I couldn't speak. My blood froze solid in my veins, and now my bottom lip trembled, just like my hands beneath the scratchy quilt. I'd awoken to a nightmare. This wasn't supposed to happen. You wake to escape, to leave terrors behind in a place where they can't find you or hurt you.
After everything that's happened, Paul and the rest, this?
His eyes appeared sullen and anguished. Despite the shock, I retained the wherewithal to doubt the sadness in them was for me. Not only for me. He continued in a softened voice, slow and deliberate and stomach-turning.
Aunt Joanna phoned me to let me know what happened. She described the circumstances of the accident. Police were first on the scene, so a report had already been filed by the time she called. You were very intoxicated.
The person she spoke to, the one who would take care of everything. It was Matthew. How could she have done this to me? She knew everything. I'd told her everything that had happened. For Christ's sake, I'm her child.
I know we haven't spoken in a long time, but Aunt Joanna was frightened you'd be arrested,
he said, taking a seat at the foot of my bed. As he sunk into the padding, the whole room pulled in closer.
And she was right. The county prosecutor was prepared to move forward with charges.
A fire grew inside my chest. My organs burned within my ribs. I willed my mouth to speak, but nothing came out. I couldn't move my lips.
You've nothing to worry over, he said with a smile. I made a few calls, and the county prosecutor agreed to drop it. I changed his appraisal of the situation. With all the stress of Paul's case, there was no point in piling it on when no one else was injured. Of course, you'll still need to show you're making an effort to get help, but nothing more.
I began to flinch with every movement he made, brushing his slacks, adjusting his collar. I jerked each time, and he appeared to take note. He avoided my eyes as though they might melt him. He finally stood from the bed, and his look suggested he realized it had been a mistake to visit me.
In any case, I stopped by to say hello and wish you well. I wanted to let you know myself that everything was squared away.
He lingered at the bedside for a moment more. My nails dug into my palms like knives.
Goodbye, Gray,
he said, turning to leave. As he opened the door, he paused and added,
I'm sorry again.
The door clicked shut, and he was gone. The flames inside my chest raged like a frantic fire searching for more oxygen, more fuel to burn. I reached for the crystal vase he'd brought, and a searing flash of pain crackled from my fractured bone and down my arm. But the bolt of adrenaline carried me as I hurled the vase at the wall, screaming. It struck plaster in a shattering crash. Glass shards rained to the floor as water and yellow petals splashed in every direction. The moment I stopped screaming, the pain became unbearable. I buried my face into my pillow and wailed.
What happened?
The nurse shouted as he bolted through the door and raced to my side.
Mrs. Godfrey, are you okay?
I let the pillow fall to my lap, but couldn't speak through my sobbing.
What happened here?
He asked again, eyeing the glass, broken and strewn. I trembled from head to toe. The pain from my broken shoulder turned from white hot to dull and deep.
Mrs. Godfrey, are you okay? Talk to me, please.
Looking into his eyes, I spoke in a raspy whisper. How could she have called him? The nurse knotted his brow, struggling to understand.
How could she have called who, Mrs. Godfrey?
Two doors led to Piper Point's cellar, a wooden aperture, gnarled and splintering, from the backyard, and the clean white paneled one in the kitchen. On that day, my hands trembled by my sides, damp like Matthew's had been when he led me to the kitchen, away from Charlotte watching cartoons upstairs. I'd second-guessed myself as I followed him, fought to squash my fear with every step. If Matthew could face the devil, so could I. And if he was tricking me, then I'd show him how tough I was. It wasn't so easy for him to fool me anymore.
Why would the devil live down there?
I asked, turning from the cellar door towards my cousin.
Might have something to do with what happened down there,
he started.
What happened?
It's past. It's history, Gray.
I opened my mouth to speak, but Matthew pressed on, taking my hand again. The sweat collecting on our palms mixed.
After the Civil War, Sherman was burning everything from Atlanta eastward. So the women of Elizabeth hid down there.
He stroked my palm with his knuckle as he spoke.
Children, too. Babies.
He reached over my shoulder and turned the whining brass handle. A gentle push, and the door creaked open. The first few steps, crooked and rotting, vanished into the blackness below. A rush of ice-cold air washed over me.
Go on, Gray.
He spoke into my ear, warm breath whistling inside my head. Matthew nudged me onto the first step. Knees locked, I almost toppled. Matthew's hand found my shoulder and steadied me.
But the Union soldiers were on the hunt for folks hiding. And in Elizabeth, in those days, there weren't too many places to hide. They stomped through Piper Point, tracking mud all over with their big leather boots. And they found them, the women and the children. Found them hiding down there. And they didn't like the fact that traitors, in their opinion, thought they might escape what was coming to them.
The second step? What happened next? Did they hurt them? My voice caught in my throat. The chills spread to my teeth and my bones, and they chattered and trembled.
They told them, angry as sin, you want to hide in the dark?
Matthew's voice grew demanding and deep.
Then you can stay in the dark.
I jolted on the third step. The wooden plank lurched, groaned. Wisps of damp mildew bloomed into a wet stench. Matthew's voice grew matter-of-fact.
So, the soldiers stuck hot sewing needles into their eyes. The women, the children, the babies, crying and hollering. Red-hot needles into the soft whites of their eyes.
They did not! A burst of courage, as sweat beaded on my brow.
They did.
Matthew shrugged. A fourth step, and my stomach flipped. My own eyes burned. He was tricking me. His story wasn't true. Daddy would have told me if all this happened. Still, if I played along, even if the fear was real, the game would go on. Maybe after, when I'd proven to Matthew he could let me in on it. We could even spook Charlotte, too.
Chopped their fingers and toes to bit, too. Tore out the tongues of the ones that wouldn't shut up. Tortured them. Showed the mothers what their babies' insides looked like, and then laughed at the wailing women 'cause they couldn't see. They locked all the blind women down here. Yep, the Union soldiers made quite a home for the devil in this cellar. Nothing the devil likes more than bits and pieces of babies strewn about. But it was cold, being locked down here back then, just like it is now. And the women needed to stay warm. With no kindling, they had to burn what remained of their children in the furnace, or they'd freeze to death.
On the fifth plank, nearly to the bottom of the rotting cellar stairs, I froze. The brave face I'd worked up dissolved, and I became a petrified piece of timber, an extension of the wooden step. As darkness swallowed us both, I started to blame myself. I'd begged to hear a scary story, and I'd taken it too far, believed too much of it. But it was too late. The damage was done, and the ghosts Matthew spoke of, real or not, had been conjured. They swirled and breathed around me as shadows danced across the cellar's stone walls. Matthew goaded.
"Go on, Gray."
Another gentle push, and both of my feet found the cement floor, cracked and uneven like the moist ground beneath it.
"I don't want—"
"So, that's where the devil lives now, among all those burnt babies. Go on, and have a look in the furnace. You can see him for yourself."
My heart thumped wildly beneath my tiny ribs. I took a deep breath. My eyes were teary, but I was almost there. Matthew would be so proud if I took a look, if I showed him I wasn't scared. I couldn't let him see that I was afraid. Stepping across the floor, I imagined my feet sinking into the wet gore of baby pieces. Blood like inky black paint. My legs slowed, wanting to turn back, to run up the steps, to the rest of the house swaddled in sunlight, back upstairs to Charlotte. But behind me, Matthew formed an impenetrable wall. His chest, swelling and shrinking in anticipation, forced me onward. Around the corner, towards the furnace. Where the devil lived. Something moved to my right. My reflection, barely visible in the dark. The landing mirror, the one Daddy had taken down, stood propped against the river stone foundation. I paused, squinting at its cracked surface, just to make sure the girl looking back really was me.
"Almost there,"
Matthew said, pushing me forward and away from the enormous mirror. I'd seen the furnace before, but this time was different. This time, it materialized from shadow like an evil thing, a creature sprung up from the uneven ground. Black cast iron, like soot or tar. When it was turned off, it melded with the shadows, but even in the darkness it gleamed, swollen like the belly of a pregnant woman. A grate crossed its pot belly, splitting it open at the seams like the people from Matthew's story. The grate curved upwards at the edges, like a smile. Wicked. Carnivorous.
"Just me and you, Gray. We're the only ones who know. A secret for the two of us. Have a look. I dare you."
My shoulders jumped. In the span of a few seconds, I'd forgotten Matthew stood behind me. The furnace had drawn all my thoughts. The air changed. My ears felt plugged or muffled. But as I crept closer, a sound grew. A sharp, constant sound. Hissing. A hissing, like a...
"Do you hear him?"
Matthew asked.
"If he looks you in the eye."
I nodded, swallowed the stiff lump building in the back of my throat.
"Well, we'll deal with that if it happens."
I was nearly to the furnace now. The constant hiss of gas feeding its unending hunger grew louder and louder, like a snake.
"Look inside."
If the grate was a mouth, then the caged bars within were sharp teeth, dripping with long strings of black saliva. It seemed to open, to call me, to swallow me whole.
"Don't look him in the eye."
The tip of my nose nearly touched the iron. The hissing came from a metal rod buried deep within the creature's belly. It hypnotized me. The hissing became a sudden tick-ticking, a spark, a swooshing roar. Flames erupted within as a searing blossom. I screamed and stumbled backwards. A blast of fiery heat and light drew the rest of the room pitch black. Streaks from the sudden brightness formed and floated across the inside of my eyelids. I saw him. A glimpse, a mere fraction of a second, but it was him. Crocodile grin. The devil. And he looked like Matthew. Matthew, who'd caught me with both arms. They latched around me then, like a too tight belt, his fingers interlocking just below my belly button.
You've seen the devil, haven't you, Gray?
He whispered, his breath hot like the fire.
You're a bad girl now.
I'd broken out in a sudden fever. My cheeks were flushed, hot to the touch. A tear rolled down my cheek, and Matthew caught it with his index finger.
Hush now, Gray,
he cooed.
Hush now.
I thought he might have sucked his finger, the one with my tear on its tip, but I couldn't be certain. I breathed in staggered heaves. He knelt, pulling me down halfway in his lap. I lost my balance and turned, catching myself with my right palm pressed against the ice-cold floor. When I looked up, I saw my reflection in the cracked mirror again. I saw him. I saw the devil.
Shh, quiet down now.
I saw the devil and now I'm bad. I am a bad girl.
You are, Matthew said, his cheek pressed to mine. I can't tell you otherwise. I'd like to, but I can't. I can't change that you've seen him.
I coughed, and a dollop of spit ran down my chin. Matthew went on.
I gotta ask you a question now, and I need you to tell me the truth. It's very important you be honest with me, you hear?
A broken nod.
I know you saw him, but did you look the devil in the eyes?
The fire was so hot I'd clenched my eyes shut, but then I'd opened them. The blinding streaks that floated before me had formed an image, a face, and the face had eyes.
I think so.
Matthew breathed heavily.
Oh, this is serious.
His words spiked my pulse. I'd never heard him so worried before. I couldn't collect my thoughts. I couldn't tear the image made in the furnaces flash from my mind's eye. Matthew's face. My cousin, who I sat clinging to like a life raft.
We've got to get him out of you, Gray. Do you hear? We've got to get the devil out.
I didn't know what he was saying. His words became distant and garbled. I watched Matthew speak, as if from afar. Another nod. Empty. Blank. My throat had tightened. Breathing became almost impossible. Matthew paused as though searching for a solution. A cure. Should I tell him the devil looked just like him? I opened my mouth to speak, but he turned my head back towards the glass. As my eyes readjusted, my cheeks now appeared splotched and wet in the mirror. I clenched my hands.
Look at yourself, Gray,
Matthew whispered. For a flash, his wet breath seemed wetter. Queasiness rippled through me. Did he touch my neck with his tongue?
Look at yourself,
he said again. My eyes met themselves in the glass, damp, wide with terror.
Look at yourself and tell me what you are.
I'd never stared at anything so hard before.
Tell me what you are,
Matthew repeated.
Tell me you're a bad girl and we can get the devil out. We can leave him in the mirror. Trapped.
My voice caught in my throat. I couldn't form words. Nothing Matthew said made any sense.
Tell me what you are. Tell me you're a bad girl.
My voice cracked.
I'm a bad girl.
Say it again.
I'm a bad girl.
That's right. You've seen the devil. You're a wicked little girl now.
Matthew's breath grew hotter on my neck, then his lips pressed against my skin. My eyes remained locked on my reflection, my mouth repeating the phrase over and over and over again. Matthew's icy fingers ran beneath the elastic waistline of my skirt. The girl in the mirror became magnetic. We shared an unbroken stare.
I'm a bad girl.
26. Nina. In the hospital corridor, Matthew King stumbled towards me. Even from yards away, he appeared distraught. An unusual look for someone like him. He must have just left Gray's bedside. He held his head down, and I doubted he even saw me. Matthew, I said. He ignored my greeting and pressed onward to the elevators, brushing my shoulder as he passed by. Why was he so obviously upset? From what I'd heard, his request for the county prosecutor to decline charges against Gray had been successful. As soon as I'd finished with the crime scene team, I'd learned the exact circumstances of the accident. Her blood alcohol content, taken in the emergency department, measured 0.3. She'd been behind the wheel of a large SUV, possibly going in and out of consciousness. It was a goddamn miracle that a street lamp had stopped her, and not a pedestrian. I turned the corner, noting the room numbers painted above each doorway. Through the open door of what I guessed was Gray's suite, a custodian swept broken glass from the floor. Another wiped down the wall with a wet rag. A nurse appeared, drying his hands off with a paper towel.
This isn't a good time to visit, ma'am. His face was worrying.
Detective Palmer. I flashed my badge. What happened in here? He sighed.
There was an incident. Mrs. Godfrey had an outburst and broke a vase against the wall.
Did she and Matthew have an argument? That would have fit with his demeanor in the hallway.
I still need to speak with her, I said, looking over his shoulder.
Gray's chest rose in regular intervals. She was awake, but appeared dazed. Her eyes were purpled with bruises, likely caused by the airbag, and a sling held her left arm up by her side. Her cheeks glistened from sweat, and the tips of her ears reddened like they were on fire.
I have to tell you, she's been given an anti-anxiety medication and additional painkillers, so nothing she says can be, he hesitated, you know, used or whatever by you folks.
Not a worry of mine, I replied, waving him off. I stood to the side, allowing the custodial staff to leave with a garbage bag of clattering glass. When the last person exited the room, I gently closed the door. Gray and I made eye contact. How are you doing, Gray? I asked, stepping closer to the bed. Her dry lips twitched as though she intended to speak, but she stopped short of words. I'm here to tell you we made an arrest. Jacob confessed to assaulting your husband early Christmas morning. Still only silence from Gray. My words seemed to have no effect on her. I decided not to disclose the blood we'd found in the marsh. Now wasn't the time for that. I continued. I thought maybe if I told you Jacob had admitted to being on the highway that night, you might remember more. A new detail? Her eyes remained trained on my own, in an unsettling way. Every time we'd spoken over the past week, she'd avoided my eyes. I'd chalked it up to anxiety or perhaps the drinking. But now, those dark eyes seemed to want to say something to me, something she couldn't bring herself to speak aloud. I smiled as best I could and took a seat in the chair by her bed. With my elbows on my knees, I leaned closer. Do you recall seeing Jacob on the highway that night, or what he did to Paul? When I reached to take her hand, she finally spoke.
Why did he do it?
Her palm was frigid and clammy, and I gave her a reassuring squeeze. Why did who do what? I asked, eyes narrowed. Why did Jacob attack Paul? She glanced toward the freshly cleaned wall.
Why did Matthew do it?
What had the two of them fought over? What could have prompted her to break a vase despite her own injuries? Unease washed over me. Do you want to tell me something, Gray? Is there something you're struggling with? She fell silent again. Look, I know about the drinking. I know it's a significant problem. Do you want to tell me what's been happening? Did Paul hurt you? Did you argue with your cousin over it? Her hand clenched at my last question. Gray, you can talk to me. We've known each other a long time, and I'm here to help you. Tell me how I can help you. Did Matthew hurt you in some way? Her breathing became erratic at the second mention of his name. She needed rest, desperately, and my presence wasn't helping. The nurse had tried to caution me about the drugs and their effects, but I hadn't listened. She wasn't going anywhere, and neither was Jacob Wilcox. There'd be chances to talk tomorrow. A pang of guilt struck me for visiting her now. My burning questions no longer justified being here, torturing her. I stood to leave. Nina? Wait. Gray called out. I stopped, and she added in a shaky voice,
I want to talk to you. I want to tell you what happened.
I sped down the highway on my way back to Auntie Tilda's, the revving engine barely keeping pace with my thoughts. Pine trees flickered by my window as Elizabeth's steepled silhouette grew smaller in the rearview mirror. Gray's allegations reverberated in my mind. Matthew King, respected defense attorney and her first cousin, sexually assaulted her in her own home when she was 9 years old and he was a senior in high school. Did I believe her? What reasons would she have to lie to me? Of course, if she did have anything to do with Paul's disappearance, a story like this would be both distracting and paint her a victim. Or had her medication simply led her to allege something so unexpected? But then, remembering the look on Matthew's face as I passed him in the hallway, one word came to mind to describe it. Shame. Her nurse said she'd been medicated heavily after the incident during Matthew's visit. After the incident. That meant something had incited the hostility, independent of any drug. I considered the possibility that the medication might have coaxed her to tell me. The visit from Matthew combined with lowered inhibitions could have spurred the disclosure. And if it was true, then had her parents known? Or suspected, maybe? A tingle swept over my shoulders. Auntie was more a caretaker to Gray than Joanna or Seamus. Would she have something to add to any of this? But as disturbing as Gray's allegations were, they got me no closer to determining what had happened to Paul. Then there was still the matter of Annie. Gray's accident only occurred because she'd gone to meet the woman. A shaken Gray had told me so afterwards, played the second voicemail she'd received from her. Annie didn't seem to fit anywhere. My own phone rang from inside my bag. I started to reach for it, but thoughts of Gray's car wreck had me pulling over before answering. Andrew Wong. Again. This is Nina, I said, making no effort to hide my exasperation.
Hello, Nina, Andrew said. You're a very difficult woman to get hold of.
Do you need something?
It would benefit you to meet with me, he answered,
I have information that'll help you.
His voice had an earnestness I hadn't detected when we first met in the street.
Then tell me right now. We don't need to meet, I said.
What had his message said he wanted? A drink?
It'd be far easier in person, he replied. A lot of nuance to discuss.
I bet. You got me on the phone. Give me something. Make me want to meet you.
You're finally speaking my language, he chuckled. For starters, Jacob Wilcox isn't your guy.
You've been keeping informed, then.
Doing my job, same as you, he answered.
He confessed to assaulting Paul Godfrey on the highway where we found his rental. A physical confrontation moments before a person vanishes is a tough thing to look past, Andrew. I glanced at my watch. I needed to be back at Auntie Tilda's in less than half an hour.
He's not your guy, and I can prove it, he replied,
his tone certain.
And I've got more for you. We're on the same team, Nina. We want the same thing, more or less. Will you meet me tonight?
I challenged him to make me want to meet him, and he'd done just that. No matter what my opinion of the guy was, I'd give him a chance to talk. More than likely, this was an opportunity to ply me for information, not the other way around. But after today, between blood by the marshes and Gray's allegations, I'd give Andrew a shot. Nothing he said could make this day any more surprising. When and where? I asked.
I'm staying at a hotel right off the interstate, the James Plantation Inn.
I know the place.
There's a bar downstairs, the Magnolia Lounge. Seems to be about as classy as it gets in Elizabeth. Can you be there in an hour?
No, I've got something. How about 10 o'clock?
See you then, detective.
He hung up. The hotel was two stories of white siding and black shutters. Four pillars stood in front of the main facade, evoking the look of a neoclassical plantation. Each Sunday, the hotel's restaurant, a country buffet, became a popular lunch spot for the church crowd. I'd been once, but watching the all-black waitstaff scurry to fill sweet teas for dressy whites kept me from ever going back. The deviled crab wasn't so bad, I thought, walking up to the entrance. Sammy wouldn't like the idea of me meeting Andrew. I didn't tell him about our first encounter outside the pharmacy, but he'd seen Andrew's business card.
We're partners, Nina, I imagined him saying. When it comes to a case, we tell each other everything. It's the only way we'll get it done right.
He might make a connection where there wasn't one between our, or rather, my, hesitation to contact the Kings about their missing rental and this city-slicking former agent from D.C. And would he be right? Was I overcompensating for bungling the start of the investigation by giving in too much now? The darkened restaurant's French doors had been closed and locked, but the bar next door was alive with piano music and soft yellow lighting. The Magnolia Lounge was more bustling than I'd expected. Clinking crystal met with laughter as a sonata played from a baby grand. Ornate potted palms sat on the burgundy carpet, and the tabletops were all oak. My watch read 9:40 p.m. I came early on purpose to pick our table. I wanted to make sure I had a line of sight to the bathrooms and the exits. If Andrew excused himself at any point during our chat, I wanted to see everywhere he went. I didn't care where Andrew was from or what he'd done before coming here. He was in Elizabeth now. My town. My turf. I'd worked too hard to get where I was to cede ground to anyone. An enormous portrait stared out from behind the piano. Scarlett O'Hara, in a pink ruffled hoop skirt, stood beneath an arching oak. Only instead of Tara, the house in the background mimicked the front of this hotel. I returned a pastel Vivian Lee's smirk with one of my own.
Can I get you something to drink, ma'am?
A waiter asked as I took my seat at a corner table. What blushes do you have?
We've got a Zinfandel 05 and a 99 white Merlot,
he replied, uncapping his pen to take my order. The Zinfandel will be great.
And will you be having something to eat as well?
No, I smiled. And do me a favor, I'm meeting someone. Don't offer him a menu when you take his drink order. We won't be staying long. Moments later, my drink sat before me. As I sipped it, my head tingled. I didn't often drink, but a day like today didn't come often, either. As I swirled the pink wine by the stem, my thoughts went to gray. What was only a simple drink to me, to so many people, was everything to her. Did I believe her allegations? Were they relevant to Paul's case? If anything, her near-constant inebriation seemed to be her alibi. But at the same time, I got it. I understood what drove her to drink. Life was overwhelming at the best of times, and at the worst, I took another swallow, allowing myself to enjoy the euphoric warmth.
Hello, Nina.
Andrew cracked a wide grin as he took a seat across the table. His hair perfectly shellacked into place. The cologne he wore, too strong. Good evening, Andrew. I failed to blunt the sardonic edge in my voice. The waiter had followed him to the table.
Balvenie scotch, neat, he ordered. No more than a finger or two, please.
A conscientious drinker, I laughed. He smiled sideways.
All things in moderation, detective.
I got right to the point. Why is Jacob not my guy? Andrew straightened the silverware in front of him as he answered.
His truck. He bought it used in Beaufort, one of those guaranteed credit lots. They finance high-risk customers, but the catch is a starter cutoff device.
If someone skips a payment, they shut the car off remotely, I concluded. With the sorts of problems Jacob had, why hadn't I thought to look into this? Andrew went on.
And nearly always, these devices include GPS tracking for the repo folks.
Which you checked.
Which I checked. I'm not quite as regulated as an officer of the law like yourself.
Was he offering me an excuse for my oversight? Reaching into his pocket, he produced a piece of paper. Printed coordinates covered both sides. A sinking feeling gripped me. Jacob's truck didn't make it to Paul Revere Highway, did it?
No. Maybe his intention had been to follow the Godfreys, but he didn't make it that far.
Andrew pointed to a single line he'd highlighted.
All the way to a second bar, a few blocks south, in fact.
Shit. The sinking feeling began to turn my stomach. He'd let his temper get the best of him. It wasn't the first time he'd been hauled in, so the idea probably didn't frighten him like it might someone else. Now, while his head was hot, anyways, he was likely revising his story to reflect to truth as I sat here. The chance to laugh at me may have even been worth it to him. Sheriff Burton's going to have a coronary. Andrew shrugged.
Probably couldn't stand the idea of someone like Paul taking what he believed was his.
It fits with everything else I know about him. My cheeks grew hot, partly from Jacob's dishonesty, partly from embarrassment that this man had been the one to figure it out. Shit.
Sorry, detective.
Eager to move on from my mistake, I spoke forcefully. You said on the phone you've got something else. He grinned again.
I do. But I need information from you first.
Here we go. I thought to myself. His opening salvo had knocked me completely off balance. Now came the part where he started to dig. The look on his face suggested he sensed my hesitation.
Don't dismiss me so fast.
He tapped his finger on the paper sitting between us.
I think I've proven I don't mind playing ball.
I sipped my wine. What do you want? He followed my lead with his scotch.
The crime scene unit. What have they found?
Blood, I answered tersely. He arched his brow.
Paul's?
Yes. The tone of his next question surprised me.
Has Paul's case transitioned to homicide?
Not officially, but you can do the math. We locked eyes. Why do you care what label the case has stuck to it? Joking, I added, he's no good to Cooper and Waters dead. Andrew's face became stolid.
In so many words, no.
I see. Beltway business was cutthroat and cold. No reason to be surprised, I guessed. He continued, polishing off his drink in the process.
When Paul's undamaged return is no longer a possibility, they'll recall me. Dead men can't run for Congress. Dead men can't vote in the firm's interests on Capitol Hill.
No concern for his family? Beyond the portrayal of worry in public, of course. I sighed. But there's still a possibility of his return. The blood we found was trace at best. Andrew corrected me.
His return? Perhaps, though unlikely. Undamaged? Not a chance.
I leaned forward on the table. What do you know? If Jacob's bad credit alibis him, then the last person seen with Paul the night he disappeared was his wife. I paused for a moment. But Paul was stone cold sober, and Gray was blackout drunk. The picture witnesses paint had her nearly immobile, being dragged off a dance floor.
That's true.
Andrew ran a manicured finger around the rim of his tumbler.
But Gray wasn't the only woman with Paul at Ruby's that night.
My heart fluttered. I'll ask again. What do you know? He lowered his voice to just above a whisper.
Like I said, I'm not as regulated as law enforcement. We've done forensics on Paul's work computers, maybe even some devices in their Georgetown place.
You broke in?
The firm has a copy of the keys in case of emergencies, courtesy of Mr. Godfrey, all above board.
His tone grew playful.
Unfortunately, no one could recall if the Godfreys kept any pets that might need care during their unexpectedly prolonged absence.
Access to Paul's work computer, devices from the home. The warrants for all these things were working their way through the system. But with the amount of coordination between jurisdictions, you've seen the debts. That's what you meant by damaged. I found myself whispering too. Andrew nodded.
Alive or not, Paul Godfrey is no longer a viable candidate as far as the firm is concerned.
His previous words replayed in my mind. Not the only woman. What else did you find? He lowered his head.
We uncovered a large trove of personal correspondence between Mr. Godfrey and an IP address in Raleigh, North Carolina. He'd gone through proxy servers to cover his trail, but our IT department followed the breadcrumbs.
My heart beat in my throat, and I spoke slowly to make up for it. Charlotte.
Correct.
Gray's sister. Gray's diligently supportive sister. My mind went straight to Annie. Annie. A name no one in the Godfrey or King families recognized, someone who had intimate knowledge of Gray's self-destructive habits. I decided to keep the details of Annie to myself. Instead, I spoke of Charlotte. She's recently divorced, a case of infidelity on the husband's part, with a woman named Florence or Florencia or something.
Not quite. Andrew shook his head as he spoke. We've interviewed the husband, Will Barfield. There was an affair, but not on his end. The knowledge of it was enough to unravel their marriage, but with whom? He couldn't be sure. I don't think he suspected Paul.
If what Andrew had said was true, then Charlotte lied about her husband being the one who cheated. On its own, it was a common thing to do. No reason to take responsibility for sinking your marriage if it's not germane to the discussion. But in this instance, it was definitely germane. Someone who used proxy servers to mask IP addresses would be careful. Does the correspondence confirm an affair between Paul and Gray's sister?
Most definitely.
Andrew puffed out his cheeks.
Those emails? Lewd is an understatement.
27. Annie. I slipped the USB, the one with my private collection of photographs, out of a tiny drawstring sack I keep hidden at the bottom of my bag. Black satin and utterly fitting. I should tell Gray about Paul. Tell her all about Paul. The things about Paul she thinks only she knows. Like his dick. Limp like cooked spaghetti when he drinks too much. Gray's not the only Godfrey who likes their liquor, though Paul likes to lie that he's a teetotaler. Then there are his hobbies, the way he likes to be tied up, tight enough for him to struggle, to really struggle. He likes it to hurt when I hit him. No playing around. Leave a mark, he'd tell me, right before I'd stuff his own silk tie into his mouth, while flames from dozens of candles painted the room in flickering shadows. Once the candles had burned down far enough, once enough hot wax had collected at the wicks, I'd mark him from head to toe. I should tell Gray. Privileged, entitled Gray. Gray, who's been afforded the entire world, only to squander it with booze and a passivity entirely out of place in modern society. Did she even know women could vote now? Hold property? I'm not certain she knows she solely owns their townhome. As I open the USB's contents on my laptop, graphic images fill my screen. I scroll through them, unable to stop smiling. My pulse races as I recall the circumstances of each one. Paul was a dolt, but he made me wet. Even now. Especially now. I continue to scroll. Not once do I appear in a single photo. He, on the other hand, is front and center. Bound every which way, from hog-tied to spread eagle. I stop at one particularly satisfying row of images. The one with the toys. Men are fools when pussy's a possibility. A lobbyist running for Congress, putting himself in front of a camera? In these ways? I shake my head. Clicking the browser, I open Shadow Mail, an anonymous email account, ostensibly for folks who don't want their personal addresses linked to passwords for online services. A spam avoidance platform is how Shadow Mail sells itself, but everyone knows its real use. I begin highlighting files to attach to the email I'd composed, but pause for a moment. Grinning, I click Select All. Then I press Send. 28. Gray. It was a sunless early morning. A single night in the hospital, and I'd been discharged. Whatever they'd given me got me to sleep, but all my dreams were nightmares. Home invasions, liars, people cutting me open for organs, only to discover them shriveled from booze. Charlotte placed her hand atop mine in the back seat of Mama's Jag.
She'd convinced Mama to ride in front with Cora, who drove in polite silence as Mama smoked a cigarette. She cracked the window, but it hardly helped. The cigarette's not what burned me up. What the hell was Mama thinking? I sat motionless, but my mind raved. Worms wiggled and crawled under my skin. Matthew's face at the foot of my bed had summoned them, and they moved relentlessly. I didn't even choose to pour everything out to Nina. It happened as naturally as breathing, and as I spoke, relief washed over me like a cleansing river, a baptism of truth. But moments later, the worms had resurfaced. No one had mentioned Paul since I'd been picked up. "I've got your phone and computer with the rest of your clothes from the accident," Charlotte said. "You can get them back at home after we've gotten you settled in." She hesitated. "No missed calls." No missed calls. No progress. And now I was back to settling in at Piper Point. "Do you think you'll be able to eat something when we get there?" Charlotte asked, rubbing her forehead. Her eyes appeared weary, too. I tried my best to give her a nod, but I wasn't sure if she noticed my reply. I knew she'd been torn up by all this. Fresh off her divorce from Will, raising two boys as a newly single mom, and now this? My shit show? Worried sick over Paul on my behalf, she'd given in to my pleas to borrow her car, despite her best judgment. And I'd totaled it. The slight smile her lips always held must have been so hard to maintain. But somehow she did it. My head buzzed, seesawing down and then wildly up again. Maybe I didn't hate Matthew most of all. No, I hated myself more. I'm a drunk. A manipulative, conniving drunk. The way I fell over Jacob at the bar made me unfaithful, untrustworthy. The liar Mama and Paul always knew I was. Wedding vows as meaningless as the promises I made to Charlotte when she handed me her car keys. I hated myself, and Charlotte deserved none of this. The sedatives I'd been administered were draining away like an outgoing tide, and the sharp bite of non-existent alcohol tickled my nose. Mama kept hand sanitizers in the back seat pockets. I reached into one and retrieved the clear plastic bottle. What the hell was I thinking? I couldn't drink this. Instead, I squeezed a dollop onto my hand and rubbed my palms together, inhaling the scent deeply. Mama ground her cigarette out in the front ashtray and turned her head to the back seat. "Soon as we're home, you need to eat, Gray. The doctors were almost as concerned with your eating as your drinking. I know you've been stressed, but..." "What are you concerned with, Mama?" I demanded. She sat silent in the face of my outburst, shock creasing her brow. Charlotte's hand reached around my wrist as if to hold me back, but I pressed. "You called Matthew. You sent him to my room." My lips quivered. I imagined what the hand sanitizer would taste like. Soapy, but the burn down my throat would feel good. My whole body began to shake.
"I did no such thing," Mama retorted,
pale eyes locked onto mine.
"I did not send him to your hospital room."
"You called him, Mama," she shouted back.
"You were going to be arrested, Gray. Arrested! You think you'd be able to do a damn thing from behind bars? Get better? Find Paul? Anything?"
Charlotte slid over in her seat so our shoulders met.
"You were stark raving drunk,"
Mama continued, turning to face the front again.
"You could have killed somebody. Multiple people.
You think a judge would go easy on you because of who you are?
I got news for you, Hummingbird. This family isn't what it used to be. I had one card to play, Gray. One card to save you. And I damn sure played it."
As Mama spoke, the blood drained from my head. Spots danced before my eyes as my chest squeezed. Her voice became distant and vague, and Charlotte's soon joined in.
"Gray, you all right?"
my sister asked. I couldn't speak. I'd lost control again. The harder I fought for breath, the more I hyperventilated. Was I dying? "This is a panic attack," I told myself. "This is what panic feels like.
This is what it's always felt like. Muffled to my ears, Mama said,
Go faster, Cora. We need to get Gray home. I'll call our doctor to meet us there.
Mama turned down her own bed for me when we returned to Piper Point.
Nonsense, she said, when I told her my old bed was fine. Mine's more comfortable. Bigger, too.
As she pulled the down-filled duvet up to my shoulders, she wiped her left eye. She squinted and turned away quick, but I saw a tear cut a trail down her cheek. I'd never seen Mama cry before. Not when Daddy passed away, not with Paul's disappearance. Never. It dawned on me then that not having seen someone cry was unusual, particularly if that someone happened to be your own mother. Just as bizarre, it had only been seeing her cry now that caused me to note a lifetime's worth of absent tears. Absent, or perhaps unseen. Sniffling, she straightened her back and said,
Press the pager on the phone hook there, if you need anything.
She closed the door behind her. She had the look of a deeply wounded woman. A corner of me felt sorry for her. Had it pained her at all to call Matthew? Was it a desperate attempt to keep me from jail, like she'd said? Then I remembered the first time she'd brought up reaching out to Matthew for help, and any pity that had collected for Mama vanished. There was no threat of jail time lurking in that scenario, just the possibility of injured pride as public news of Paul's disappearance broke. What had happened that night on the highway? I racked my brain, struggling to carve out some kind of memory, something beneath the surface of my subconscious. Nina told me Jacob had confessed to being with us on the shoulder of Paul Revere early that morning, but nothing about that detail seemed right. No, I was sure Jacob hadn't been there. My top teeth clanged against my bottom ones as my mind turned to the one outcome I'd been running from since Christmas morning. Was Paul dead? Voices from downstairs woke me. The clock on Mama's wall said it was morning, which meant I'd slept for almost 24 hours. But I hardly felt rested. It was more like my body had simply given out. A bowl of stone-cold grits sat on the nightstand. The pain in my shoulder had dulled, but I still winced as I lifted myself up. Shadows from the tightly closed shutters obscured the room's garden mural in darkness. The painting of a placid outdoor space skewing into a haunted one. Weeping trees, twisting and thorny. Sliding off the large bed, my feet stung when they touched the icy pine wood floor. I took a gulp of water from the faucet in the bathroom, catching the medicine cabinet's reflection in the sink mirror. No point going through there again. Mama had removed the good stuff already, and there wasn't a chance she'd put it back with me still at home. At least I'd been discharged with a handful of Percocet. Even if Mama or Charlotte rigidly dispensed them, they'd only help stave off the cravings. Cravings. The thought pushed an invisible needle into the back of my neck. I was stuck in a bone-dry desert with only tiny white pills. Would they actually take the edge off? Mornings weren't so bad. I'd have to wait for the afternoon to find out. The doorbell rang, and the voices downstairs paused as someone went to answer it. The needle stuck me again, and my whole head ticked. Who had Mama called over? In the midst of my panic attack during the ride home, she'd said something about calling the family doctor, Marianne Connor, the aging woman whose name was all over the rattling pill bottles in Mama's cabinet. But I heard more than a single visitor. A range of voices spoke in muted chatter. My thoughts went to those television shows about interventions. Would Mama do something like that? Certainly not right after I was released from the hospital. Who would they even call? Francis? Interventions were all about disclosures and feelings. Telling anyone anything about our family didn't fit with Mama's personality. Not if she could help it. Curiosity gripped me as I crept down the hall towards the staircase. From the landing, I could remain hidden from whoever sat in the salon, but still hear most of the discussion. I squatted, avoiding my reflection in the cracked mirror. My body ached like it had been beaten with a baseball bat.
"Thank you for calling," an older woman said. "Sorry I couldn't get over here sooner."
"I'm at the end of my rope, Mary Ann," Mama replied.
So it was Dr. Connor. A man spoke up.
"No coffee for me, Cora."
I recognized his voice from church the night my life unraveled, and from school many years earlier. A bellicose drawl, unchanged over time. Pastor Charles Calcutt.
"Thank you all for coming. Gray's in serious trouble, and as hard as it is to admit, I'm in need of advice," Mama said.
"So this is an intervention." I nearly laughed aloud, only it apparently wasn't to include me. An intervention organized by Mama sure looked an awful lot like a scheming cabal, plotting what to do with me while I slept, voiceless, in the master bedroom upstairs.
"She needs real help,"
another voice announced. Charlotte's. I breathed a relieved sigh. At least I'd have a semblance of advocacy down there.
"God's help is the best sort of help there is," Pastor Calcutt rebutted. "We run a program, you know. Reformed Disciples. All folks who struggled with addiction and turned to Christ to do something about it."
"I didn't know that," Mama exclaimed.
"Indeed, Mrs. King. The way the Great Recession tore through Elizabeth, nobody's immune to the relief drugs and drink promise. I can't tell you who attends regularly. That's confidential, of course."
I imagined Pastor Calcutt nodding with self-satisfaction as he spoke that last.